According to the American Thyroid Association, 12 to 30% of Americans will suffer from thyroid problems at some point in their life. And according to some people, they think this is an underestimate. They think it's way more than that. Now, most of these thyroid problems are hypothyroidism. Now, some are hyperthyroidism, which just means you have a faster metabolism, and that has its own set of problems. But most problems are hypothyroidism, which that is a sluggish thyroid, and it can cause weight gain, depression, and a host of other problems on its own. And we're going to be talking about, this is what we're going to be talking about today. I'm going to be talking to Dr. David Jockers. He's a chiropractor and a natural health practitioner, a best-selling author and a sought-after speaker, and I'm really, really happy to have him with me today. I've been on his newsletter list for years, and he has a lot of really good information and great articles. He has his own podcast, and he's just an encyclopedia of some really good information, and he's been able to help a lot of people.
The good life is one inspired by love and guided by knowledge. You'll find both love and knowledge here on The Misdiagnosed Life. Here is your host, Beverly Butler.
Now, Dr. Jockers, I want to talk about one of the articles that actually led to this podcast, and where you talk about hypothyroidism. And I thought it was an excellent article, and I'm like, that's what I want to do the podcast on. We need to talk about this, because I haven't talked about thyroid problems on this show, and that's something that I think is hugely misdiagnosed and underdiagnosed and is a big problem in America. And I agree with you and some others that I think this is misdiagnosed and underdiagnosed, and people are missing it.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. It's huge. I would say probably one out of two people that I'm working with on a regular basis has a significant thyroid issue. And, you know, the unfortunate thing is that 60% of the people that have thyroid problems don't even know they have it. They've never been diagnosed. They've never been properly tested. And it's just extremely common, especially in women. Ultimately, you know, if you're a middle-aged woman and you're dealing with symptoms like low energy, weight loss resistance, cold hands and feet, possibly thinning of your eyebrows or hair loss, then there's a really good chance you've got a thyroid issue.
Yeah, and that sounds like that's about 80, 90% of the women I know of out here.
Yeah, it seems like it, right?
Now, you've said that you think, in this article, you said you thought it was an epidemic. Now, I tend to agree with you, but why do you think this is an epidemic?
Well, really, number one, because our body is just massively inflamed in today's society. We have so many environmental toxins that affect the thyroid, and the thyroid is such a vulnerable organ. In fact, one of the big things that I teach my clients is if you have a thyroid problem, it's actually typically not an issue with the thyroid. It's usually an issue with the immune system, or possibly the gut or the liver. So the body's struggling to detoxify, the immune system is malcoordinated, and it's starting to attack its own tissues. And this is really what ends up happening. And really what it comes down to is an overload of toxins and key nutrient deficiencies. And those have to be addressed.
Yeah. Now, I wanted to ask you about this too. Most of the thyroid problems, the hypothyroid problem, most of the thyroid problems are hypothyroidism. And most of hypothyroidism, now according to what I've been reading, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't it Hashimoto's, which is the autoimmune problem of the thyroid?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. So basically, most thyroid issues, in fact, some researchers say about 80% of hypothyroidism is related to autoimmunity, which would be Hashimoto's. And then we know that all cases of hyperthyroidism are autoimmune, where the body's own immune system is attacking the thyroid gland, and key factors within the thyroid gland, such as an enzyme called thyroid peroxidase, or possibly the backbone of thyroid hormone, which is called thyroglobulin. And so in the case of Graves' disease or hyperthyroidism, that the autoimmune attack actually stimulates more thyroid hormone production, whereas in the case of Hashimoto's, it shuts down thyroid hormone production. And oftentimes what I see on lab work is just an inability to produce enough T3 or to convert T4, which is inactive thyroid hormone, into the active T3.
Now, and where does that happen in the liver?
That's a great question. Well, basically the thyroid gland itself will secrete both T4 and T3. And the body uses both of them, but T4 is what we call inactive, meaning that it's not going to actually create the cellular response that we want, whereas T3 is. So in order to get the cellular response, the body then takes T4 and converts it to T3. 60% of that is done in the liver, and it's done with these enzymes called deiodinase enzymes, 5-deiodinase enzymes. Deiodinase basically means it deionizes. So when we look at thyroid hormone, T4 means 4 iodine molecules, T3 means 3 iodine molecules. So how do you go from 4 to 3? You deiodize. So basically you take one iodine off. The liver has these enzymes, these 5-deiodinase enzymes. It converts that. 60% of the overall conversion is in the liver. The other 20% is in the gut. And then basically the liver always converts and produces reverse T3 as well, which is an inactive form of T3. So some of the T4 will turn into an inactive form of T3 called RT3. Some of it will turn, or 60% should turn into active T3. And then another 20% turns into what we call T3 sulfate and T3 acetate, which go into the gut. And then the microbiome in the gut, as long as the bacteria are healthy, they'll convert those two into active T3 that the cells can use.
Okay, so it's happening more than just the liver. It's in the gut and other places. Okay, so now don't you think this is probably a big reason why America's so tired? I mean, because if Hashimoto's is in hypothyroidism is a major cause of thyroid problems.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And so I think in our society, we're so wired up. We've got, so much pressure on us, and we have so much stimulation coming from electronics, whether it's TV, computers, cell phones. There's always things going on. We're pushing ourselves to work more, to get more done, to invest more into our relationships. And there's very little energy, or I guess you could say just attention in our society given to self-care. And, yeah. And so what ends up happening is we have an epidemic of adrenal fatigue, where we're just burning out what we call our hypothalamic adrenal pituitary axis, or our HPA axis. So we're burning that out, and we're also burning out our thyroid hormone. And so I typically see those two things together, where somebody has either a stage 2 or stage 3 adrenal fatigue, as well as poor T4 to T3 conversion process, because really the body's saying, hey, we need to slow down. And if we keep producing thyroid hormone, or if we keep producing enough adrenal hormone, then you're just going to blow yourself out. You're not going to be able to recover. So the body's trying to actually say, hey, we need to hibernate a little bit. We need to recover, respond. We need time to rest so we can heal properly. And, we've got to listen really to the messages the body's giving us. And that's so important with this.
Yeah. And, the problem with fatigue, or the issue with fatigue, is that is a symptom. I mean, that's a signal that the body's sending. And with what you said, I think it's right on the mark. Usually adrenals are connected to the thyroid. And I heard years ago that it's actually the three musketeers. You have especially the female hormones, the adrenals and the thyroid are all, I mean, all the glands are connected. Everything's connected, but these are specifically connected. And again, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but they're specifically connected, and some people call them the three musketeers. And so if you're a woman in midlife where you're going through menopause and you really have those female hormones, then you really can have a mess if you've got all three of them out.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And that's why for women, it's basically they have a 75% greater chance of developing a thyroid problem than men.
And do you think it's because of the hormones?
Yeah, absolutely. And women also, men just genetically as a whole, men have better stress adaptation responses in their system. Women are a little bit slower. Women need a little bit more rest, a little bit more recovery time than men do as a whole. And so,
well, maybe it's because us women work harder than men. You reckon?
Hey, you guys have a lot on yourself. But when we look at just overall hormone production, and we look at, just stress levels in general, okay, both men and women in our society are blowing each other out with stress. However, men seem to adapt a little bit better than women. And with women, they'll get into adrenal fatigue, and it will definitely cause issues with female hormone production. So estrogen, so sex hormone production, estrogen, progesterone, testosterone balance, as well as thyroid hormone. And I no wonder why 75% of thyroid problems are happening in women.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know why women have to be so complicated. I don't know why we have to be so complicated. We have all these hormones. And men, I mean, they're just not that, doesn't seem to be anyway that complicated. And so I think this is causing us just a whole lot of problems. But anyway, but that's what, that's the way the world works, I reckon, right now. Now, I wanted to ask you, now, we all know how important iodine is.
Yeah.
And iodine, of course, in a few decades ago, they took iodine out of our foods. They started taking it out of our foods. They started replacing, you know, they started putting fluoride in water, which people that are studying research this stuff, we know that's just a poison. And then they put, they took iodine out of breads and start replacing it with bromide. Now, both of these two elements can, you know, take the place of iodine in the thyroid. Do you think this has a lot to do also with while we're seeing more thyroid problems, and will just taking iodine help displace those two other elements and get the thyroid working again?
Yeah, that's a great question. So all of those groups, fluoride, bromide, as well as chlorine as well, are all on the periodic table. They're all part of this halogen group. Okay, same thing with iodine. So they're all in the same group. So they have somewhat of a similar molecular magnetism, I guess you could say. And so basically, iodine receptors are also going to attract bromide, chlorine, and fluoride. So if we are exposed to a lot of those things, which again, like you were saying, are really heavy in our society, we have a heavy dose of fluoride coming in our system, you know, not only from water, so it's in tap water, but it's also in a lot of toothpastes. So your typical commercial toothpaste, a lot of dentists are giving fluoride treatments. You also have things like Teflon pans, nonstick pans that have fluoride molecules that are in them. So you have things like that. You've got bromide, which is in a lot of soft drinks as well as baked goods. You've got chlorine in our water system. So if we're not drinking filtered water and we're not avoiding these toxins, these things are going to compete with uptake in the thyroid, and that's going to affect thyroid hormone production. So really the way to reduce that would be, obviously, number one, get filtered water, because one of the main sources of fluoride and chlorine is water. So get a really good water filtration system. I recommend a reverse osmosis system because we know it's going to take out the chlorine and the fluoride. Fluoride is not easy to get out. So if we just do a carbon filter, or if we just, which is basically what we find in most refrigerators. And most of my clients, I'll ask them if they're drinking filtered water, and they'll say, yeah, I get it out of my refrigerator. So they're getting a good amount of chlorine out of that. They're just not getting the fluoride out. And so fluoride is going to pass right through that, get right into their glass, and they're drinking that right up. And that's affecting their thyroid. It's affecting their brain. It's affecting a lot of systems of their body. So we definitely want to get a good, really good water filtration system. And then the only issue with reverse osmosis is it takes out all the minerals. So I recommend adding a pinch of Himalayan pink salt back in, which has 84 trace minerals in their right ratios. So you add a pinch of that back in per glass of water, and possibly even some antioxidants, like squeezing a little bit of lemon in there, putting some lemon juice or essential oil in there can be really helpful. To add back antioxidants and bring more life to the water. So drinking good, clean water like that would be the first big step. Obviously, staying away from processed foods. We're going to find bromide in basically processed foods. So soft drinks, baked goods, which we definitely want to avoid for a healthy gut. We want to avoid these sort of baked goods. They've got gluten. They're high in carbohydrates, throw off our blood sugar. They've got toxins in them like bromide. So we stay away from those types of things. That's really the first big step. Okay, we stay away from those, and then we may need some more iodine. I typically recommend a low-dose source at first. I don't recommend high doses of iodine just because people with autoimmune thyroid can react negatively to higher doses of iodine.
Okay,
so I'll recommend.
What could happen to them? I mean,
they can end up with basically like a thyroid storm, where all of a sudden the body starts producing more thyroid hormone. And because the body may also have a thyroid peroxidase antibody or a thyroglobulin antibody, as the body upregulates the production of thyroid peroxidase and thyroglobulin, it's also producing more antibodies that are attacking the thyroid, causing inflammation and damaging the thyroid. One way to know that would be, like, if you had, for example, nodules, thyroid nodules. That's typically going to be related to antibody production. So whether you've been diagnosed with Hashimoto's or not, if you know you've got a thyroid nodule, you would definitely not want to do high-dose iodine. What I will recommend is starting to add some sea vegetable into your diet. So you can do that. There's a great snack. It's called Sea Snacks. And it's basically seaweed, olive oil, and sea salt. It tastes awesome. Even my my twin boys are 14 months old, and they love it. And so you wouldn't think a 14-month-old would actually love seaweed and actually ask for it, but they do, and that's because it tastes great. So you can get some of that into your diet. You can also get a lot of herb spices like Herbamare or Bragg's Sea Kelp Delight, which have kelp and different sea vegetables that you can put in. That's really the best source of iodine, of natural iodine. They also have a ton of different trace minerals and antioxidants in them. So just getting the whole blend of sea vegetable is awesome. There's a lot of selenium in sea vegetable, which helps to balance the utilization of iodine. So when the body starts to produce T4 or T3 and it starts to iodize the thyroglobulin molecule, it will produce hydrogen peroxide as a byproduct. And if that hydrogen peroxide is not neutralized, then it will damage the thyroid, and that can also lead to a nodule. So it can cause more inflammatory damage. So selenium is really key for selenium and also other agents that help boost glutathione, which is our body's master antioxidant. Those things help to recycle that hydrogen peroxide so it doesn't damage the thyroid gland itself. So sea vegetable is a great source because it has a good balance of iodine and selenium. So I'm a big fan of doing that. Yeah, sometimes I'll use a supplement.
Yeah, more and more people are talking about how important selenium is, especially for the thyroid.
Yeah, so key. Also, wild-caught fish, so wild-caught sockeye salmon, for example, or sardines, that's going to be very rich in selenium as well as iodine. And so we want a high selenium fish because a lot of people are worried about mercury in fish. Really, the key is the selenium to mercury balance. And so some fish have high mercury, low selenium. That would be like swordfish. We would want to stay away from that. Whereas other fish have high selenium, okay, and you know, moderate mercury or so. And so that selenium actually helps to compete with uptake in the body with the mercury. So getting a good wild-caught sockeye salmon can be amazing for your body. So consuming that with sea vegetable and also with something like some sort of a bitter herb like dandelion, cilantro, or mint, or what else would be good? Parsley would also be good. Doing something along those lines, those sort of bitter herbs help the liver to deactivate and help the body to detoxify mercury as well. I'm also a fan. I'll tell my clients that if they have fish, which I do recommend doing, good wild-caught fish, then about 3 or 4 hours after that, or maybe like right before bed, to consume either activated charcoal or a good probiotic that has humic and fulvic acid, like a Prescriptocyst or something along those lines, to help grab up any additional mercury or environmental toxins that may have come in with that. And those are just good things to take on a regular basis anyways. But, really getting the iodine in from your food sources, in my opinion, is really the best way to go as far as a first line. Sometimes we may need more iodine down the road, but let's start with food first.
Yeah, and it sounds like that is something, and of course, with any health condition, you need, it's always advisable to consult with your healthcare practitioner. And again, we're not giving a medical advice on the show, but we just want you to know what the problems are and what some options are out there. And I also think that it's always better to get our nutrients from food when we can do that. And of course, these food items that you've mentioned here are fantastic, and it's something that everybody needs to take a note of, because it's always better to get your vitamins and minerals and supplements from your nutrition, that is, from your foods, because the body knows how to handle that, and that way you're not going to be getting too much. If you take iodine supplements or any supplement, you can take too much sometimes, and that's not good. So if you have a thyroid problem or any other health condition, it's always best to consult with your doctor, because you don't want to take too much of something and then, more problems result from that.
We are excited indeed to be celebrating our one-year anniversary here at America Out Loud. And we could not have done it without you. Well, in short order, we've become one of the fastest-growing podcast and talk radio networks in the world. For all the latest news, entertainment, your blogging, and now web TV, as we celebrate our one-year anniversary here, and we'll see you back at AmericaOutLoud.com. Well, I'm not sure why we take our health for granted, but I know that many of us do, include me in that company. Recently, I had a couple of health scares that got my attention real quick. I started a new product called Healthy Cell. I took it for about 3 weeks, and man, I started to feel really good. I found myself sleeping better at night, had more energy in the day, and less stress and anxieties, and just feeling better overall. Well, with those kind of results, I knew I had to do something, so I reached to the company directly with a request to bring Healthy Cell back to America Out Loud, and here it is. Well, typically you'd pay $110 plus shipping and handling. Well, now you get it for just $79.99 for the monthly plan, plus free shipping. That's right, they'll pick up the shipping, and you pay just $79.99. Use the code OUTLOUD on HealthyCell.com, or just click the banner on the front page of AmericaOutLoud.com.
On these the thyroid problems, let's talk about what some of the symptoms are. And I know some people, you know, we've talked a little bit, you know, the weight gain, the, you know, lower metabolism, slower metabolism and all that. But what are some of the other, you know, let's just go over the symptoms of thyroid problems, of hypothyroidism specifically.
Absolutely. So when we look at hypothyroidism, we know the thyroid is key for metabolic activity within every cell. So metabolic activity brings heat. So somebody that has hypothyroidism is going to have a tendency to be cold, particularly in their extremities, because thyroid is also key for circulation. So my cold hands and cold feet are common. Also hair, healthy, good, strong, high volume hair is thyroid is very key for that. So for a lot of women, they'll notice thinning of their eyebrows, particularly the outer third of their eyebrows. That's like a classical sign of thyroid problems. Also, thinning of their hair on the top of their head. So a lot of women will start to notice that they're having issues. The hair is falling out. It's thin. It's brittle. That's oftentimes a thyroid issue. Skin as well. So it plays a big role in the production of sebum, which is what basically it's kind of a oil gland or basically our sebaceous glands will produce a sebum, which basically helps to reduce infection along the skin, helps protect the skin. So when we get lower levels of sebum, we end up with dry, more brittle skin. So that's another big issue. Thyroid hormone also plays a big role with LDL receptor activity. LDL cholesterol is what we call the bad cholesterol. Although I don't actually think any cholesterol is bad. This is what we know it as, bad cholesterol. And so what happens when we have low thyroid is that we get less, we have less LDL receptors in our liver. And what does that mean? That means basically, and really throughout our body, that means basically that as we produce LDL cholesterol, it's going to stay in the bloodstream and not actually get into the cells. LDL is really key for bringing fat-soluble nutrients to the cells. It's also very important for sex hormone production, like estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, helps produce cortisol and aldosterone, so really key adrenal hormones. And so when we're not able to actually get the LDL to the cell where it needs to be, okay, not only do we get lowered production of all of these key hormones, okay, and less fat-soluble nutrients to the cells, but also now we end up with a lot more LDL in our bloodstream, which can oxidize and cause problems. And so oftentimes when I see somebody, you know, they bring in their lipid profile, they're looking at cholesterol levels and triglycerides, and I see their LDL real high, one of the first things I think about is thyroid. I'm usually thinking it's either a blood sugar issue or a thyroid problem, or maybe a combination of both. And so oftentimes their doctor will just go ahead and give them a cholesterol lowering medication. And that's starting to address it way downstream, not going upstream and saying, okay, why is the cholesterol elevated? Why is this going on? How do we get to the root cause? And if all we do is lower it with a medication, we're never getting to that cause. We're never really addressing the thyroid. The person's just going to get worse and worse. Not to mention that when we take that cholesterol medication, now we're going to end up with lower amounts of coenzyme Q10. And somebody who has a thyroid issue to begin with is already not producing enough energy within their cells. And CoQ10 is one of the most important nutrients for energy production within the cells. So the person just feels worse and worse and has worsening thyroid symptoms. So that's a really big one. with this. Weight loss resistance, that's another big issue. So you've tried diet, you've been following a healthy diet, you've been exercising, yet the weight's not budging, oftentimes a thyroid issue. Just gaining weight without changing anything in your diet, your activity levels stayed the same, your nutrition has stayed the same, yet you're gaining weight. Okay, that can be an issue with thyroid problems. So all of those types of issues, those are really common. Also, brain issues. Thyroid plays a really important role with brain function. So memory problems can be related to thyroid. Dizziness oftentimes can be an issue. Somebody's noticing a lot of dizziness.
Brain fog,
poor balance. You got it. That's right. So those are all classic signs.
A lot of us suffer from brain fog.
Yeah.
A lot of people do.
Yes, absolutely. And that can definitely be related to thyroid.
Yeah. I wanted also, is there like one big, huge telltale sign? Because, you know, some of these symptoms can be symptoms of other problems. You know, there's so much overlapping that happens. But is there one just telltale sign that you've got a thyroid problem as far as a symptom goes? Or is there any one?
You know, there isn't one telltale sign. I would say the biggest one that I'll see that isn't necessarily related to other things would be the thinning of the outer third of the eyebrows.
Yeah.
That's a big one that, you know, you can have adrenal fatigue and have low energy, brain fog, weight loss resistance, but you typically don't have the thinning of the outer third of the eyebrows. Whereas with a thyroid problem, you will. Other issues would obviously be related to like swelling around your thyroid. So that can be, obviously an issue related to the thyroid. So swelling in that region or just kind of more of a growth in your thyroid and oftentimes some tenderness. And that's kind of like right near your sternum, right near the top of your chest. That's basically where the thyroid gland sits, the bottom of your neck, kind of where that meets. And so if you're noticing tenderness in there or swelling, that can also be related to thyroid. Although a lot of people have thyroid issues and don't have swelling in their thyroid, so... the outer third of the eyebrows is more of the telltale classic sign.
Yeah. Yeah. And so women tend to have more problems with the thyroid than men. What do you think is really, really causing it? Now, we've kind of talked about this a little bit, but do you think, is this mainly toxins that toxins are just throwing the whole system out of kilter?
That's a great question, Beverly. I would say three things. Okay. Number one is nutrient deficiencies. So if you're deficient in zinc, selenium, iodine, if you're deficient in B vitamins, iron, or basically if you have anemia or mild anemia, that's all going to play a role with your thyroid and your ability to convert T4 to T3 and even produce T4. So nutrient deficiencies, chronic toxicity, which can play a role with deficiencies. Also, if you're deficient, you're not going to be able to detox well, so you're going to have a greater amount of toxins that are going to be stored in your system and not able to get those things out. So they go hand in hand. They play together. And then the third thing would be an inability to adapt well to stress. And that's going to affect our ability to absorb nutrients and toxins. So if we can't adapt well to the stressors that we're under, then you know what? We're going to end up with a lot of different issues. And for many people, it's going to be a thyroid problem. So those three big things need to be addressed.
Yeah. What specifically happens, and I talk about stress a lot on this show, and I've talked to different people, but what specifically happens in the body when we are under so much stress? Does it cause the cells to just lock up, so to speak, or to keep things from being absorbed and detoxed?
Yeah. So basically, when we're under stress, our body shunts its entire nervous system towards a fight or flight response. Why is that? Because immediate survival is more important than really thriving in life, right? And so the parasympathetic nervous system is what calms us down. It's kind of like the brake. And that's all about resting, healing, and digesting. So if we're going to digest our food well, we need to be in a parasympathetic state. If we're going to rest and heal well, we need to be in a parasympathetic state. But if we're going to exercise or if we're going to run away from stress or react quickly or even do a presentation or speak with intensity and energy, I need to be in a sympathetic state. So that's that fight or flight mode. So we should have this natural balance where I should be able to turn on my fight or flight when I need to, but then back it down when I want to eat food and digest, when I want to rest at night. What happens is when people, when they have emotional stress, or if they have major trauma and they have a physical stress, or if they have toxicity or leaky gut syndrome or something along these lines, their stress response is always on. So they never back into that parasympathetic mode in order to digest their food well, in order to rest and heal well. In fact, when they're in fight or flight, every time they eat a meal, they're actually causing more stress because their body's not able to produce enough digestive juices, enough stomach acid, pancreatic enzymes, and bile in order to metabolize the food well. So they cause more inflammation in their gut. That inflammation then triggers the adrenals because the body says, hey, we're under attack. There's inflammation in the gut. There might be an infection going on in there. We need to turn on the adrenals. We need more stress hormone out here to be able to react and respond to this. So these people just never, they don't get enough time in this parasympathetic mode where they're able to rest and heal. So their body becomes real catabolic. It starts breaking itself down. And in a sense, one of the ways the body responds to that is by downregulating its sensitivity to stress hormone. So just kind of like insulin, when somebody's diabetic, they may still produce insulin, but their cells are resistant to it. So it's the same thing with the adrenals. You may still produce stress hormone, but your cells are less sensitive to it because the body's saying, hey, we need to shut this down. And it's the same thing with a thyroid. Your body's just not going to be able to convert that T4 to T3 well. Sometimes we'll see the inactive T3, the reverse T3 go up. But either way, you're not going to be able to get that good conversion. So therefore, you get less cellular activity because the body's saying, hey, you know what? We're just blown out with stress. We need to rest. We need like a hibernation period here in order to recover. And so the body starts to give us those signals, and that's what we see. And so basically, you know, we've got to be able to adapt to stress well on a daily basis. And we need to be able to turn on our stress response when we need it, but then also back it down. And one way you can actually see how well your body is adapting to stress is a heart rate variability test. And you can actually download an app on your iPhone that checks your heart rate variability. I know we do this in my clinic. We'll check people's heart rate variability. And basically what that means is between heartbeats, okay, you have this natural rhythm between each heartbeat. So you may have like a 60 beat per minute heart rate, and you have this natural rhythm in between, and it's gonna measure the rhythm. And we actually want a variable rhythm, meaning we want the rhythm to change. So we want our heart rate to be, you know, fairly low when we're at rest, like 60 or so. However, we want variability in there. When we don't have variability, when it's kind of like this static rhythm where it's just kind of the same between beats, that's a sign of low stress adaptation. And that's one way to measure. And again, you can get an app on your phone and also go to clinics and get that tested. And we do that at our clinic on all our patients. So,
well, I want to remind everyone that you're listening to Beverly Butler and the Misdiagnosed Life podcast and talk radio show on the America Out Loud Network. And I'm here today talking to Dr. David Jockers. And we're talking about the thyroid, specifically hypothyroidism and Hashimoto's, which is in most cases, of hypothyroidism, there is Hashimoto's. Well, Dr. Jockers, I also wanted to ask, why don't more doctors test for autoimmune thyroid problems? Because it's my understanding from what I've observed and read and everything, doctors don't test for that much. Why is that?
Yeah, most doctors, they've never been taught to test for it on a regular basis. Usually they're just testing.
And why is that? Why is that? They're going to med school. They should be taught this
stuff. Right, exactly. That's a great question. And so the reality of it is that most clinical medical doctors are being trained that unless they see TSH way, way, way up high, they're really not even going to think thyroid issue. On top of that, even if the person does have antibodies, it really doesn't change their course of treatment. So if they see somebody that has hypothyroidism where their TSH is way up high, certainly above 5 or 6, then what they're going to do is they're going to give typically a synthetic T4 medication, usually Synthroid, which is the number one prescribed thyroid medication, sometimes a levothyroxine, something along those lines. Okay, so when they give that's really their course of treatment, and they're just going to wash the thyroid. And so if they find that there's high antibodies, it's the same treatment. They just give Synthroid, that's it. So they have no idea how to really suppress, naturally get to the underlying root cause of the antibodies, okay? And that's really the key. Sometimes, And they'll do this particularly with Graves' disease, because when you have autoimmune hyperthyroidism, it can be life-threatening. Whereas autoimmune hypothyroidism, that Hashimoto's, you typically don't notice heart rate arrhythmias, where basically you've got this rapid heart rate increase, this tachycardia. Whereas with Graves' disease, people can die from heart disease. The heart can shut down because of just rapid increases in heart rate all of a sudden. And so because of that, they will usually use corticosteroids to start to suppress the immune system with a Graves' disease, or radiate the thyroid or pull it out. With Hashimoto's, they don't typically do that. The person's suffering and struggling, but they just say, well, the only real solution we have is taking a thyroid medication, whether you feel good or not.
Yeah, which really doesn't, like we've talked about, you said, it doesn't get to the root cause of the problem. Well, hasn't there also been a problem with accurate testing, even with other tests on the thyroid?
Absolutely. I mean, there's no perfect test, number one. There can be a lot of variabilities with tests. But also on top of that, they're really not testing the full thyroid. And so basically what they're looking at is TSH, typically is the gold standard in the medical system, which is thyroid stimulating hormone. That's secreted by the pituitary gland. So they're actually testing the brain. And so the pituitary gland produces TSH, which then tells the thyroid to produce T4. So sometimes they'll test TSH and T4. Some doctors just test TSH. Sometimes they'll do TSH and T4. And if those things are in their normal range, which is really not optimal, okay, in fact, you know, the way they came up with those ranges is they took a whole bunch of people with thyroid problems. So they already had thyroid problems. And they tested them, okay? And they said, okay, well, you know, the people that seemed to respond best, they were in this range here, as opposed to the people who didn't. Now, we don't really want to look at people with pre-existing thyroid problems to come up with a optimal range. We actually want to look at, you know, what would normally be optimal, where people are really able to function at their optimal level. And so normally with TSH, for example, I want to see that between 0.5 and 2.0, definitely not above 2. Whereas in the clinical model, I think it's above 5.5 before they're saying, okay, this is a problem. So you could have a TSH of 4 and they'll say, you know what, you're in normal range. Whereas a functional medicine doctor, somebody that's practicing functional health, they're going to look at that and say, you know what, there's an issue with the brain signaling the thyroid. There's some sort of a miscommunication here. And it may be because you're not converting T4 to T3 well, or you're not producing enough T4. So the next thing we look at is T4, okay? And normally we should be between, you know, roughly 6 and 12 on that, okay? And so in that range, that's really the optimal range, okay? So if you're producing enough, it doesn't necessarily mean you're getting enough thyroid hormone expression in the cells. So we still need to look at T3. And in particular, we need to look at free T4 and free T3. Because we can have a protein that binds to these, right? Or basically, they're all bound. They have to be free in order to actually express themselves in the cell. So I'm looking at free T4 and free T3. And really, I want my free T3 to be between 3 and 4. That's what I'm looking for on a regular basis, between 3 and 4. And I would say the vast majority of the tests I see, the individual is producing enough T4, but not enough free T3. And that's a big issue. T4 to T3 conversion process that's being altered. And that could be altered right at the thyroid level by antibodies. It could be altered by a sluggish liver. It could be altered by a sluggish gut or a dysbiosis, where we have an overgrowth of bad bacteria compared to good bacteria. It can be adrenal fatigue that's leading to that poor T4 to free T3 conversion. And that's really the key. And medical doctors are not testing that. It's very rare that they even test the free fractions of T4 and T3.
Yeah, it seems like the typical medical field just doesn't really know how to treat these hypothyroid issues. You're one of the few doctors, even doctors in alternative medicine, they just want to give, you know, what, Armour thyroid or something, or just give something to help with a thyroid. And, you know, that's just treating the symptoms. They're not really trying to get to the root cause of the problem. And not many doctors are like you that try to get to the root cause of the problem. But I do think that is beginning to change. And I wanted to ask, I want to also say, you know, you talk about the test. That's one of the problems with the standard, what they consider normal today on these tests. They're testing a sick population. And so what's normal now, you know, in some cases they're changing the normal range and lowering it. Because the population, it's not that what's normal is changing, is that the population is getting sicker and sicker. And so they're basing what's normal on a sick population. And
very, very true.
That's problematic. I mean, that's very problematic. So, you know, so you have to not really pay much attention to what the test says normal now.
Yeah, exactly. So there's very, very few tests that are out there on the mainstream LabCorp panel that you can actually just go based on the clinical ranges. And that's why it's so important to see a functional medicine practitioner, a functional health practitioner, because they're going to be well educated on the optimal ranges. And, you know, health is not about just avoiding a chronic disease. It's really about optimizing our health on a day-to-day basis. And so getting the right testing can make all the world a difference for somebody when it comes to getting to the root cause of any sort of functional breakdowns. Getting the right supplementation, the right nutrition plan, the right lifestyle strategies to, again, optimize their health.
Yeah. Now, what effect do you think this is this problem is having on our healthcare system? And I'd be curious to see what you think the state of our healthcare system is in today. Got a lot of sick people out there that's not getting the proper, correct treatment, and they're just going to get worse if they don't get to the find out what's really causing the problem and try to fix it. They're just going to get worse, and they're just going to get sicker and sicker. What's this going to do? Even more so to our healthcare system. I mean, it's already, in my opinion, a mess. What's your opinion on it?
Well, absolutely. It is totally a mess. And so, fortunately, there is a swelling movement of doctors and practitioners getting into this functional model. And the reason why is that, I mean, look at typical medical doctors and people that are practicing medicine in the standard model, and most of them are not happy. Some of them make a lot of money and are successful, but a vast majority are not happy. And the reason why they're not happy is they're just not fulfilled with the results that they're getting. They're working tremendous amount of hours, and they're you know, seeing people with the same conditions, really not getting better. And so a lot of doctors are starting to say, hey, I want to do something to help actually, I want to work with people that actually are interested in getting healthy and actually see real results. And so there's more and more people that are getting into this sort of model that we practice, you know, where it's this functional health model. And this, and now consumers are demanding it. And so there's more and more people that are looking for this. You know, ultimately, you know, right now insurance companies really don't back the functional health model, but I do think that will change over time as we get more and more demand. So right now you do have to pay out of pocket for this, which definitely, you know, thins the field because, you know, not everybody can afford a lot of this stuff. But what everybody can afford is start to make the right lifestyle changes, start to take care of yourself. You got to have a proactive approach. And we're getting this information out. I know, you know, there's so many different websites out there. My website has got, you know, a tremendous amount of just free content that you can, you know, there's shopping plans, there's tons of articles on different topics like thyroid health that you can just jump right in. In fact, right on my homepage, I give you my digestion energy quick start guide. So it's a quick start guide that, you know, I pretty much in the guide, I guarantee you that within 2 weeks of applying these things, you should notice at least a 25% improvement in your energy levels, and you should notice significantly improved digestive health. And you can get that for free right on drjockers.com. So there's a lot of resources out there for you to take advantage of. And then if you're able to step up, if you're somebody out there that really wants to take your health to the next level, then definitely investing in getting the right testing and working with a functional health coach can make all the world a difference.
Yeah, I agree with you. And your website is phenomenal. And not only do you have a lot of free, you know, articles and good information and all, but you have your own supplement line. And you've got some good, clean, healthy supplements that people can also take. You've got, I know, a gut health, which I got myself, a shake. And you've got just all kinds of things. You've got recipe books. You've got all kinds of things. So I highly suggest that people, if you're interested, go to drjockers.com because he does have a lot of, you know, just a lot of good free information. He has his own podcast there that you can listen to. And so it's a great resource, a great resource. Now, when you see treat people with thyroid issues, do you, I mean, you know, so many people, I mean, you do treat people and get them over. I mean, this is something you feel people can be healed from, correct? As far as the Hashimoto's and that kind of a thing, or is this something that just has to be managed?
Yeah, it's a great question. I would say, like, I would never use the word cure. So when somebody has a tendency to have, let's say, a thyroid problem or a Hashimoto's, we're not curing them, but we can put it in remission naturally, right? By using supplements, right diet, healthy lifestyle principles. So for many people, they can get off of their medication or avoid the need for medication, you know, really just by applying the right principles for a long enough period of time. And so the reason why I don't say cured is because if we go back to living a bad lifestyle where we're overstressing ourselves, where we are eating a bad diet, we're doing those types of things, the condition is going to come right back. So it's not really a cure, but you can definitely put it in remission and optimize your health with the right strategies.
Yeah. And how long does it usually take for if somebody going through your program to help, you know, put the thyroid problems in remission? How long does that usually take to get it where things are working again?
Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit different for everybody. And so it really depends on what the root cause is. If that individual has got a tremendous amount of heavy metal toxicity or several different chronic infections, then it can take a lot longer because infections aren't always easy to kill off. Sometimes it could take time. And if somebody has heavy metals oftentimes can take, I mean, even a year to help pull out of the system. So it really depends on the individual. Okay. So if it's a simpler issue where it's just, hey, this person has bad diet or they just have adrenal fatigue or something like that, then it's easier to address. However, again, if there's chronic infections in there, if there is heavy metal toxicity that's going on, it's going to take longer. So, you know, I've seen people get tremendously better, I mean, within a month. And I've seen other people where it's taken a year and a half, right, before they really saw the changes and the results. Yeah, so the key is get the right testing done, work with a health coach, and, you know, obviously to start doing the things that you can do on your own, which is making good dietary changes, following an anti-inflammatory diet, doing things to help reduce stress, mitigate stress in your life, sleeping better, really having good sleep habits, moving your body regularly. All those things would be important to do on your own. And then, you know, if you're plateauing, then definitely getting the right testing and working with a functional health coach will help get you to the next level.
Yeah. Now, when people come and see you, give us kind of an overview of what working with you would look like if they wanted to come and see you for or work with you to help with their thyroid problems.
Yeah. So basically what we do first is a detailed history. So I want to know, you know, as much as possible about the person's health history. And we also do a metabolic assessment. So I want to see where their major symptoms are. And so I want to see, hey, does this individual have a lot of symptoms related to low stomach acid or to overgrowth of bacteria in their intestines or yeast or something like that? So we've got a questionnaire that they fill out, which kind of helps me. I mean, it's not a actual lab test, but it helps me start to understand where the causes may be. And then off of that, that helps me to order the right lab testing. So then I will coach them on, here's the right diet. In fact, we put them on one of our online programs. Like, for example, most people with thyroid problems, I'm going to put them on my autoimmune elimination diet because I just assume that there's some sort of autoimmunity in their system. And even if there isn't, it's the best nutrition plan and lifestyle to follow to heal the body quick. So basically, I'll usually use that. And we'll start working on things like, you know, like better sleep, stress adaptation, this elimination diet where we take out dairy, gluten, corn, soy, nightshades, peanuts, really all nuts, seeds, different things like that. So we take out, it's kind of this paleo autoimmune diet. And then we start to slowly add foods back in with pulse testing to actually see if the food is causing a stress response or not. And then also using a food journal, a food guide to actually to assess how the person's responding each day when they start to try to add back in other foods. So anyways, we start to follow a program like that. Meanwhile, we do lab testing. Once the lab tests come back, that helps me pinpoint what supplements are going to work best and any additional strategies that we need to follow. Usually to start, I'll get somebody on something like vitamin D, omega-3 fatty acids, maybe a probiotic, maybe a multivitamin, possibly magnesium, really depending on what their major symptoms are. We'll get them on kind of a standard set of supplements. Then once the lab work comes back, we'll rotate in and out supplements to help with digestive support if they need that, to help with mitochondrial function if they need that, to help with killing off infections if we need that. So we go through a process to really help the body to function at its peak potential and remove the underlying root causes of the dysfunction.
Okay. So I have to ask this question. So if people are on your program, or when people are on your program, do they start losing weight fairly quickly when they start eliminating some of these things and doing some of these things and getting on that special diet?
I would say about 50% that need to lose weight start losing weight quickly. And they're just, obviously that creates a lot of momentum for them. And it's awesome. Another 50% struggle. And they're telling me, hey, I feel better. My energy is better. I'm sleeping better, but I'm not losing the weight. And so for some individuals, their system, and what we have to understand is this, is that you store your toxins in your fat cells. So the fat cells are storage cells. And when you have chronic toxicity, that's where your body's going to store the toxins. So somebody that has a low toxic load will typically start to lose weight quickly. Whereas somebody has a higher toxic burden, oftentimes as they start to respond, they're not going to lose weight as quickly because the body's saying, hey, we don't want to release these toxins until the body is ready, until the adrenals are stronger, till the gut is better. We're not going to release these toxins. So the key is, hey, let's just continue to go at it. Let's continue to follow the process. What I'm always looking for is, how's your brain functioning? How is your gut? Are you moving your bowels on a regular basis? How are you sleeping? Are you waking up in the middle of the night? Are you having trouble falling asleep? These are more functional parameters rather than weight. So I want to make sure that they're sleeping well. I want to make sure that their energy is stable throughout the day. I want to make sure that they're not having, you know, major skin outbreaks. So I look at skin, that they're not having increased amounts of pain. If anything, they should have lower levels of pain or less frequency of pain. So I'm looking at those sorts of things before I look at weight.
Okay, well, that makes sense. And it just all goes to show that we have to start listening to the body's intelligence, because the body's sending us signals. It's doing it for a reason.
That's absolutely the truth. I mean, I tell all of my clients, the process of getting well, when you've got major symptoms in your body, the actual process of getting healthy, it's kind of like getting a master's degree in your own health. So if you were to go to school to get a master's degree in whatever topic it was going to be, you'd be in school for at least a year, and you'd be spending a lot of time, money, and energy in order to get that degree. Well, it's really the same thing with your health. If you want to optimize your health and you're coming from a place where you're dealing with hypothyroidism or many of the symptoms involved with that, you should look at this as, hey, this is a minimum one-year journey. And on top of that, it's going to cost me a lot of time, money, and energy. I'm going to need to really devote myself to that. But the good thing is, when you come out of that, it's better than any degree you could possibly get, because now you have a level of mastery of your own body. You know how your body responds to things. You know what things are going to help improve your system, what sort of activities, foods, behaviors are going to be harmful. And you'll know kind of your tolerance point. Like, for example, my wife, she's had digestive issues. She was having digestive issues after the birth of our twins. And so I put her on an elimination diet, did some stomach acid support, some different supplements, things like that. And she would be great. And then she would eat something with like sugar alcohols, or she would eat, you know, have a few meals with erythritol or xylitol or some sort of sugar alcohol, which you think, okay, her diet was really clean. She was, you know, off gluten, but she was doing these sugar alcohols, and all of a sudden she started burping, having digestive issues. So I was like, okay, I'm going to pull you off these until you can go a month without having these symptoms. And then after you can go a month without having these symptoms, I'll let you try them for one meal a week, and we'll see if the symptoms come back. And so now we know her tolerant point, because she was able to handle one meal per week, not have the symptoms come back. But if she starts to eat them over, you know, several meals, now she starts burping, she starts having gas, things like that, bloating. So you got to understand your tolerance point. So it's not like, hey, every single person needs to be on an elimination diet for the rest of their life. You just need to get to the point where your body's healthy and strong enough to where you can adapt to stress better. And then you find your tolerance point. You'll also find out your best rhythm for supplements too, as you start to really master your own health. You don't necessarily need to be on 12 different supplements for the rest of your life. You may choose to, and you may feel great with it. I know for myself, I take a lot of supplements because it helps optimize my performance. But if I had to get by, I could get by with a few of the supplements and still be able to retain a really high level of functioning. So you start to understand yourself and what your body needs to really be able to function at its peak potential. And you know, that's priceless, because you can carry that with you for the rest of your life, and it's going to make you, it's going to give you the ability to perform well at whatever it is that you're doing.
Right. And that's, I love this approach, because it's just a common sense approach. And what people, you know, what you need, what people need to understand is that not one diet works for everybody. Not one supplemental work, if it works fine for me, it may not work for you. And there's all kind of variables, but with your approach, it sounds like you take all these variables into consideration, and each person can learn what works best for their body. Like if I went to you, I would learn what works best for my body, and then go from there, and you know, help it to get healed, and or you know, to get a lot better, and then to be able to go from there. And so that just sounds like a common sense approach to health. And again, you know, like you said, when you go through and get your body to the point to where it's healthy, and you know how your body works and what works with your body and what doesn't, then that's like gold. I mean, that's like gold. You've got that for the rest of your life that you can spend being healthy, because you know how to take care of your body. And that's key also. It's knowing how to take care of your body, your specific body, not anybody else's, but your body. Well, thank you, Dr. Jonkers. I appreciate this. This has been a very interesting podcast. And again, if you want to check Dr. Jonkers' website out, you can go to drjonkers.com. He has a lot of really good information on there. And you can also subscribe to his free newsletter. And like I said, I've been subscribed to it for years, and I really enjoy it. And there's also an article on there on hypothyroidism, that what we just talked about today, if you want to read further on this subject on his website. And the link will be under the show notes on the podcast page. Well, thank you, Dr. Jonkers, again, and thank you for listening. This is Beverly Butler with the Misdiagnosed Life podcast and talk radio on the America Out Loud Network.